Interlude 3, from Wild Card Chic by Tom Wolfe, New York, June 1971.
Mmm, these are nice. Little egg rolls filled with crab meat and shrimp. Very tasty. A bit greasy, though. Wonder what the aces do to get the grease spots off the fingers of their gloves. Maybe they prefer the stuffed mushrooms, or the little Roquefort cheese morsels rolled in crushed nuts, all of which are at this very moment being offered them on silver platters by tall, smiling waiters in Ace's high livery. These are the questions to ponder on these wild-card chic evenings. For example, that black man there by the window, the one shaking hands with Hiram Worster himself, the one with the black silk shirt and the black leather coat, and that absolutely unbelievable swollen forehead, that dangerous-looking black man with the cocoa-colored skin and almond-shaped eyes, who came off the elevator with three of the most ravishing women any of them have ever seen, even here in this room full of beautiful people. Is he an ace? A palpable ace? Going to pick up a little egg roll stuffed with shrimp and crab meat when the waiter drifts by, and just pop it down the gullet without so much as missing a syllable of Hiram's cultured geniality? Or is he more of a stuffed mushroom man at that? Hiram is splendid. A large man, a formidable man, 6'2" and broad all over. In a bad light, he might pass for Orson Welles. His black, spade-shaped beard is immaculately groomed, and when he smiles, his teeth are very white. He smiles often. He is a warm man, a gracious man, and he greets the aces with the same quick, firm handshake, the same pat on the shoulder, the same familiar exhortation with which he greets Lillian and Felicia and Lenny and Maya Hartman and Jason, John, and Dee Dee. "How much do you think I weigh?" he asks them jovially and presses them for a guess. 300 pounds, 350, 400. He chuckles at their guesses, a deep chuckle, a resonant chuckle, because this huge man weighs only 30 pounds, and he set up a scale right here in the middle of Aces High, his lavish new restaurant high atop the Empire State Building, amid the crystal and silver and crisp white tablecloths, a scale like you might find in a gym, just so he can prove his point. He hops on and off nimbly whenever he's challenged. 30 pounds, and Hiram does enjoy his little joke. But don't call him Fat Man anymore. This ace has come out of the deck now. He's a new kind of ace, one who knows all the right people and all the right wines, who looks absolutely correct in his tuxedo, and owns the highest, chicest restaurant in town. What an evening! The tables are set all around, the silver gleaming, the tremulous little flames of the candles reflected in the encircling windows, a bottomless blackness with a thousand stars. And it is that moment Hiram loves. There seem to be a thousand stars inside and the thousand stars outside, a Manhattan tower full of stars, the highest, grandest tower of all, with marvelous people drifting through the heavens. Jason Robards, John and Dee Dee Ryan, Mike Nichols, Willie Joe Namath, John Lindsay, Richard Avedon, Woody Allen, Aaron Copland, Lillian Hellman, Steve Sondheim, Josh Davidson, Leonard Bernstein, Otto Preminger, Julie Belafonte, Barbara Walters, the Penns, the Greens, the O'Neills, and now, in this season of wild-card chic, the Aces. That knot of people there, that cluster of enthralled, adoring, excited people with the tall, thin champagne glasses in their hands and the rapt expressions on their faces, in their midst, the object of all their attention, is a little man in a crushed velvet tuxedo. An orange crushed velvet tuxedo, with tails, and a ruffled lemon-yellow shirt, and long, shiny red hair. Tizian Brant Tisara Sek Halima Sek Ragnar Sek Omion is holding court again, the way he must have done once on Takis, and some of the marvelous people about him are even calling him Prince and Prince Tizian, though they don't often pronounce it right. And to most of them, now and forever, he will remain Dr. Tachyon. He's real, this prince from another planet, and the very idea of him, an exile, a hero, imprisoned by the army and persecuted by Huac, a man who has lived two human lifetimes and seen things none of them can imagine, who labors selflessly among the wretched of Jokertown. Well, the excitement runs through aces high like a rogue hormone, and Tachyon seems excited too. You can tell by the way his lilac-colored eyes keep slipping over to linger on the slender Oriental woman who arrived with that other ace, that dangerous-looking Fortunato fellow. I've never met an ace before, the refrain goes. This is a first for me. The thrill vibrates through the air of Aces High until the whole 86th floor is thrumming to it. A first for me. Never known anyone like you. A first for me. Always wanted to meet you. A first for me. And somewhere in the damp soil of Wisconsin, Joseph McCarthy spins in his coffin with a high, thin, whirring sound. And all his worms have come home to roost now. These are no Hollywood poseurs, no dreary politicians, no faded literary flowers, no pathetic jokers begging for help. These are real nobility, these aces, these enchanting electric aces. So beautiful. Aurora, sitting on Hiram's bar, showing the long, long legs that have made her the toast of Broadway. The men clustered around her, laughing at her every joke. Remarkable. That red-gold hair of hers, curled and perfumed, tumbling down across her bare shoulders, and those bruised, pouting lips. And when she laughs, the northern lights flicker around her, and the men burst into applause. She's signed to make her first feature film next year, playing opposite Redford, and Mike Nichols will direct. The first ace to star in a major motion picture since... No, we wouldn't want to mention him, would we? Not when we're having so much fun. So astonishing. The things they can do, these aces. A dapper little man dressed all in green produces an acorn and a pocketful of potting soil, borrows a brandy snifter from the bartender, and grows a small oak tree right there in the center of Aces High. A dark woman with sharply sculpted features arrives in jeans and a denim shirt. But when Hiram threatens to turn her away, she claps her hands together and suddenly she is armored head to toe in black metal that gleams like ebony. Another clap, and she's wearing an evening gown, green velvet, off the shoulder, perfect for her. And even Fortunato looks twice. When the ice for the champagne bucket runs low, a burly, rock-hard black man steps forward, takes the Dom Perignon in hand, and grins boyishly as frost rhymes the outside of the bottle. Just right, he says, when he gives the bottle to Hiram. Any longer and I'd freeze it solid. Hiram laughs and congratulates him, though he doesn't believe he has the honor. The black man smiles enigmatically. Croyd is all he says. So romantic. So tragic. Down there by the end of the bar in gray leather, that's Tom Douglas, isn't it? It is. It is the Lizard King himself. I hear they just dropped the charges. But what courage that took. What commitment. And say, whatever happened to that radical fellow who helped him out? Douglas looks terrible, though. Wasted. Haunted. They crowd close around him, and his eyes snap up, and briefly the specter of a great black cobra looms above him, dark counterpoint to Aurora's shimmering colors. And silence ripples across Aces High until they leave the Lizard King alone again. So dashing, so flamboyant. Cyclone knows how to make an entrance, doesn't he? But that's why Hiram insisted on the sunset balcony after all, not just for drinks out under the summer stars and the glorious view of the sun going down across the Hudson, but to give his aces a place to land. And it's only natural that Cyclone would be the first. Why ride the elevator when you can ride the winds? And the way he dresses... All in blue and white, the jumpsuit makes him look so lithe and rakish. And that cape, the way it hangs from his wrists and ankles, and then balloons out in flight when he whips up his wings. Once he's inside, shaking Hiram's hand, he takes off his aviator's helmet. He's a fashion leader, Cyclone, the first ace to wear an honest-to-God costume. And he started back in 65, long before these other aces come lately, wore his colors even through those 2 dreary years in Nam. But just because a man wears a mask doesn't mean he has to make a fetish of hiding his identity, does it? Those days are past. Cyclone is Vernon Henry Carlyle of San Francisco. The whole world knows. The fear is dead. This is the age of wild card chic, when everyone wants to be an ace. Cyclone came a long way for this party, but the gathering wouldn't be complete without the West Coast premier ace, would it? Although, Taboo thought that it is, with stars and aces glittering all around on a night when you can see 50 miles in every direction. Really, the gathering isn't quite complete, is it? Earl Sanderson is still in France, though he did send a brief but sincere note of apology in reply to Hiram's invitation. A great man, that one, a great man greatly wronged. And David Harstein, the lost envoy. Hiram even ran an ad in the Times, "David, won't you please come home?" But he's not here either. And the turtle, where is the great and powerful turtle? There were rumors that on this special magical night, this halcyon time for wild card chic, the turtle would come out of his shell and shake Hiram's hand and announce his name to the world. But no, he doesn't seem to be here. You don't think... God, no. You don't think those old stories are true, and the turtle is a joker after all. Cyclone is telling Hiram that he thinks his 3-year-old daughter has inherited his wind powers, and Hiram beams and shakes his hand and congratulates the doting daddy and proposes a toast. Even his powerful, cultivated voice cannot cut through the din of the moment, so Hiram makes a small fist and does that thing he does to the gravity waves and makes himself even lighter than 30 pounds until he drifts up toward the ceiling. Aces High goes silent as Hiram floats beside his huge Art Deco chandelier, raises his Pimm's cup, and proposes his toast. Lenny Bernstein and John Lindsay drink to little Mistral Helen Carlyle, second-generation ace-to-be. The O'Neills and the Ryans lift their glasses to Black Eagle, the envoy, and the memory of Blythe Stanhope Van Rensselaer. Lillian Hellman, Jason Robards, and Broadway Joe toast the turtle and tachyon, and everyone drinks to Jet Boy, father of us all. And after the toasting come the causes. The wild card acts are still on the books, and in this day and age that's a disgrace. Something must be done. Dr. Tachyon needs help. Help for his Jokertown clinic. Help with his lawsuit. How long has that been dragging on now? His suit to win custody of his spaceship back from the government that wrongly impounded it in 1946. The shame of it, to take his ship after he came all that way to help. Oh, it makes them angry, all of them. And, of course, they pledge their help, their money, their lawyers, their influence. A beautiful woman on either side of him, Tachyon speaks of his ship. It's alive, he tells them, and by now it's certainly lonely. And as he talks, he begins to weep. And when he tells them that the ship's name is Baby, there's a tear behind many a contact lens, threatening the artfully applied mascara below. And, of course, something must be done about the Joker Brigade. That's little better than genocide, and... But that's when dinner is served. The guests drift to their assigned seats. Hiram's seating chart is a masterpiece, measured and spiced as precisely as his gourmet food. Everywhere, just the right balance of wealth and wisdom, and wit and beauty, and bravura and celebrity. With an ace at every table, of course, otherwise someone might go away feeling cheated in this year and month and hour of wild card chic.